Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com. Looking at the season that was for Arsenal Women that has now finished, and I always think covering football seasons and being a football fan, sometimes it just makes you feel like life's going by really fast, because one minute it's August or September and the next minute you're clapping the players on their lap of appreciation. And obviously that's what happened with Arsenal on Saturday against Aston Villa. Not the result they wanted to end the season, but I think we could see that they've been running on fumes for a little while, that perhaps their objectives were really achieved already. And I think you got the sense in those last few games that they were kind of, you know, taking a little bit of a breath out. But that's not really what we're going to analyse. We're going to do more of a kind of holistic review of the season that was, a season that's seen Arsenal finish third and in the final Champions League qualification spot, got to the Champions League semi-final in front of a sold-out Emirates Stadium and won the Conti Cup. So plenty to chew on, but not all completely positive. I think we'll be critical as well and look at areas for improvement next season and not just assume that Arsenal didn't win the league solely because of injuries. And here to do that with me, I'm delighted to welcome back from The Athletic, Art de Rocher. Art, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me again. I hope everyone's season has been well. And yeah, hopefully there's enough time to kind of refresh before, I was going to say August, but in reality it's July.
Yeah, exactly. With the Women's World Cup and, you know, Arsenal will be starting their season in the first weekend of September, even though the WSL starts a few weeks later because of the Champions League qualifying and all of that. But there'll be plenty of time to talk about that over the summer. We're going to take a little bit of a backwards look at the season that was in 2022-23. And I think I can't really remember a season like this in terms of just the amount of stuff that happened, for want of a better phrase. But Art, just your absolute overall kind of impression of this season for Arsenal Women.
Yeah, kind of similar to your, I guess, introduction, in that I feel like the squad probably got as far as they could given the context of everything. I remember being sat in the press box watching the second leg against Wolfsburg and just thinking, and this was when it was still 2-2 on the night, and I was just thinking, how would they actually fare if they got through? I don't want to put that energy out there, but it just felt like it would take another monumental effort to even be really competitive if they got to the final. So I thought what they did kind of achieve throughout the season was respectable. Obviously a few areas where they could have maybe done a little bit better, but on the whole I thought it was a season where there was progress from last year. I think you can look back 12 months ago and say Arsenal are in a better place than they were this time last year under Jonas Edelvar, and their foundations are stronger, I'd say. So that's kind of how I've viewed the season as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those foundations later based on what Jonas told us last May on the last game of the season. He gave us some really interesting stuff about where he thinks the team should go next. And, you know, in terms of playing out from high pressure and playing those games against the junior boys teams. And he's kind of got another you know, I guess, mission in mind for next season. We might come on to that a bit later, but something a little bit more immediate that unfortunately we need to deal with on the podcast This was an incredibly awkward story for me to work on. But the story that broke last week about Hafayeli leaving, which was obviously all confirmed subsequently, and I know you asked Jonas about that, and I think it was very telling when he said our recruitment needs to be good there, and I think he said something you asked him about. No, was it you or someone else who asked him about having a left footer at centre back, and he said that's a big column on the Excel spreadsheet at the moment. But I mean, clearly a massive blow to Arsenal. I don't think there are a lot of players out there like that. And, you know, Jonas described it on Saturday to us as, you know, the first player he's lost that he really didn't want to lose. Just your impressions on, I mean, I assume you agree that that's a big blow, but in terms of like her leaving and the hole that leaves, particularly with Leah Williamson likely to be out for at least the first half of next season.
I was at Colney for that press conference and talking to a few people before it all got started. And the main thing was, before even looking at her as a centre back, she's just a really good footballer. And I think that's, in terms of what Jonas said, given her, I guess, a bit more of a global platform to show that, I would never have known about her skills or her dribbling skills, for instance, if she wasn't at Arsenal. So I think in that sense, you're losing someone who was coming to around 30 years old, but played like a 22-year-old in what she was doing on the pitch. And then, as you mentioned, I think that left foot was so important because I remember when she signed and you asked Jonas about it and he spoke about basically the balance it gave them building up and probably allowed them to be a lot better at playing out under pressure, which was a real kind of hindrance for them in recent seasons. So those two aspects are really important, but also attacking wise, I think came up really big goals. I know the one in the Conti Cup final is not officially hers, but we'll say it is for now. And obviously Manchester City away, a few other big ones as well. Wolfsburg away,
too. Yeah.
I think there's a massive, I guess, influence that Arsenal will be missing in terms of just an all-encompassing figure. And hopefully they're able to find someone who can almost replicate some of those attributes, but I don't think they would be able to find someone who could cover all of those bases.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's such a shame as well because the partnership between Leah Williamson and Hafayeli just looked like a really, like potentially world-beating one. And Leah said it herself in her kind of Instagram post about Hafayeli leaving that she didn't feel like they got to play together enough because of the injury situation for both players. And when you consider that when Hafa came in, she actually missed a lot of the run-in from her first season because of injury. She missed a lot of the first half of this season. So actually, for the 18 months Arsenal have had her, she's probably only really been an active player for a bit more than half of that. And just look at the reception we all saw on Saturday and just like, when we put the story up on Ask Blog News, we're over 600 quote tweets on that. And I read most of them and I can tell you there was an outpouring and that is going to be a huge loss. Cause I mean, in men's football, top class left footed centre backs are very rare. I think they're even rarer in women's football. And we might have to settle for the fact that maybe we can't find something like that because it's so rare. And it's such a shame, but the player has reasons that I don't need to kind of go into, and I'm very assured it's not an Arsenal thing. Really, it's more of a personal thing for her. But yeah, incredibly awkward when I got that story. I'm sure it was much the same for you on your side, but. And clearly I waited a long time for Arsenal to sign a Brazilian player. So Gio, it's up to you now to really pull things together there. So, I mean, that's clearly, that's a big gap that needs addressing this summer. And I think we all know that, and Jonas has been very upfront about that. But where else do you think? And obviously Arsenal are in such a weird position because they've got players injured who are going to come back. Mm. But Jonas has already been very forward about the fact that he felt the squad wasn't big enough anyway.
Yeah.
Because of previous, again, he's been quite upfront about what he considers recruitment failures. Where in particular would you really like to see Arsenal strengthen in the summer?
Yeah, I guess the first one is more one we all kind of know in terms of what Jonas has spoken about in terms of a prolific striker. And that's not a slight or a disrespect to Stina Blackstenius, because we all saw how important she was second half of the season. And to be fair to her, I think even before that, I think she was a very, very good option. So I think it's more just about competition and depth, especially if you want to compete in two or three competitions. And then if you're looking beyond that, probably for me, that central midfield area can probably do with a bit more beefing up. And when I say that, I don't mean physicality. I just mean depth, because yes, Liavorti and Kim Little have both signed new contracts, but both at an age where you think, okay, what's the kind of succession plan? And yeah, I think someone who can do a similar role, so more akin to what Liavorti does, because I feel like that role is a bit more unique. I know Kim Little is a unique player, but I just think what Liavorti does is probably just a bit more of the glue that holds everything together. So that's kind of where my mind is at. And I'm not sure if I mentioned it on here or somewhere else, but the Manchester City game at Meadow Park last month, I was just watching Yui Hasegawa and thinking she's perfect for that role. But obviously I doubt that's something that would be able to happen just because of the club she's at. So yeah, that's a bit unfortunate, but a player of that mould, I think would be quite good to go for.
Yeah, quite. I think we haven't had Liavorti back up, apart from maybe that season when Marlin Gutt was there, and there was like clearly a bit of a succession plan that never happened. And I'm with you, like Kim has, you know, she's been picking up more injuries over the last couple of seasons, I think. And look, when the time comes, and I'm not saying like she's only 33, like she's not dead or close to it. Like Kim is a player who could play for a few, like I think she could play for another 3 or 4 years easily at the top level if she wanted to. However, whether she can do every minute of every game, you know, and look, when that time comes, we're not going to get another Kim Little. It's going to have to be like someone else. Maybe that's Catherine Kuhl, who's similar type of player, but different. Like you can't just buy the same player, you know, plug in and go. Maybe it'll be Victoria Pilova. Maybe that's, you know, like there are options, but I agree with you. I think that's a weak point in the squad, particularly again without Leah Williamson for the first half of next season, because she's kind of been the de facto backup to Liavorti, and now neither of them are there. You know, I think there have been some interesting developments as well. We'll cover it a bit later, the move to the back three, but that kind of midfield box that Arsenal have been playing with that back three. And I still wonder if we might still see that midfield box shape, even if it doesn't have a back three behind it next season as the next part of the evolution. Definitely a striker is needed. I know they retain a very strong interest in Alessio Russo. Don't know exactly how that's going to shake out, but the interest there is still pretty strong. Because Stina is the only player actually that played in every single game this season. And clearly as well, she does such a physically demanding job in terms of the runs she makes and everything. So I think that's clearly very high on the club's kind of, particularly, you know, they brought in Jodie Taylor for 6 weeks. That's kind of it's going to sound disparaging and I don't mean it, but when I say that's how kind of desperate Jonas was for extra firepower, like he really, you know, wanted another striker. So that's clearly not going away. I think Gio is probably going to go out on loan, and maybe we'll see Chloe Lacasse come in. But yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a defensive midfielder who can perhaps play centre half as well, because I think the issue we had when we had Marlene Gut, for example, is she's really good, but if Leo Volt is fit, you don't play, basically. Yeah. So a bit like we've seen on the men's side, right? If you've got guys who can fill in, who aren't your first choice 11, but they fill in for two or three different roles, then they stay closer to the team, and we're going to have an issue at centre half that may be a bit temporary until Leo comes back. So yeah, I think some of that optionality would be really, really nice. But so let's talk about a player who, you know, maybe we found this season, who at the end of last season was finding football minutes pretty difficult to come by in the Arsenal team. Freedom Mornham was voted as player of the season. I don't think anyone really contests that. She started 29 of Arsenal's last 30 games. And I think it's something like 32 of the last 34 or something like that, that she started, and one that she didn't start. She played the second half against Leeds in the cup. So she's really, really backed up the minutes this year. But I guess just your impressions of her season, and, you know, who else might have been in the running for player of the season for you?
Yeah, before I start on this season, I think the talent's always been very clear. I remember being at the Everton game last season. So this would have been, I guess, a couple months.
October.
And she just pinged it in from about 25 yards. So the quality's always been clear. I just think this season, obviously with, I guess, first it was just the competition for the place of the number 10 and being a little bit of a different option to Vivian Miedema, you saw her being used in a little bit of a different way. I think maybe she was just more confident as well. And from there, you see, I guess everyone will see the goals and the goal tally as the defining thing, but I feel she's been very complete in what she's done this season in terms of so clean technically. For her height, I think she's so good in those tight spaces. But then also she's very aggressive when Arsenal need her to be aggressive. So I think her all-round game has just really lended itself to what Jonas Edvald wants his Arsenal team to look like and to be. Last season, that happened with Beth Mead, and it's just happened with a different player this season. And she's been able to explode because of that. So yeah, and then in terms of other players, it's really difficult because I feel like obviously
who's been fit.
Yeah, you can't go down that route. But to be fair, I can't really look past Katie McCabe, just because of in moments she's grabbed the opportunity so often, and she's done it for years, so it's not really anything new to people who are watching, but it's just another reminder of, I guess, football isn't just about kicking the ball from A to B. There's so much mentally that goes into it. And that little, I guess, window of 3 or 4 days between picking up the injury against Bayern and then scoring the winner and performing ridiculously well against Man City. I think that probably sums up Katie McCabe in a nutshell, really. And it's been quite nice to see her get the armband in the recent weeks as well. I know circumstances aren't great, but to have a bit of that recognition going into this little run-in, I think was nice.
Yeah, definitely. And I know we spoke to her after that City game, and you tried unsuccessfully to get a picture of her boot with the hole in it still from Wednesday night. Like, it sounded like she didn't even have a chance to consider a change of boots. But I think you're right. I think Katie's someone who the harder it gets, the more she likes it. If that sounds like the more challenging the season got, like she's just one of those players who just almost likes, maybe even needs that kind of challenge, you know. Yeah. And I remember, like, you know, we've signed some big left backs and left wingers over the years, and you kind of start to think, oh, what's Katie's, and Katie like responds every time. And yeah, I think she's been great. I think another player I'd like to touch on as well, I don't think you could put her up for player of the season because she only joined in January, but Victoria Pelova. And I was really interested in something Jonas said when I asked him, I don't know, about a month ago. I kind of said, look, you played her on the right, like in that Beth Mead role. She's played all over this midfield box shape as the right 10, as the right six. And I kind of said, do you have a position for her in mind? And I thought his answer was fascinating because he referenced Frieda Mornham. And he said, like, I didn't actually think Frieda would be a 10. He said, first of all, she just played and trained so well that he thought, I've got to get her into the team somehow. And if that means moving someone out of the way, that's what I'm going to do. But he also said, if you just looked at her data, you'd never put her as a number 10 because she's never been a big goal scorer, but now she's become one. And he was talking about getting players 23 and under and kind of saying, sometimes you've just got to take a little bit of time to look at their attributes and decide exactly where you fit them in later. And it kind of, in explaining that, I think that's kind of what he's saying about Victoria Pelova, that it's kind of like, actually, I like the attributes of the player. I'll work out the position later, you know. And
very Arsene Wenger-like.
yeah. But I thought it was fascinating as well, because I definitely get locked into that squad building thinking of, like, again, on the men's and women's side, it's like, you know, look, we were having a discussion about Kim Little, right? Right, we need another Kim Little to do what Kim Little does. And that's rarely how it works. What you do is you get another player who has different qualities and you go from there. And it was really interesting for him to say, actually, I don't really have a role in mind for her at the moment. I'm just going to let her play. And, you know, if she forces her way in, I'll figure it out later. But just your kind of opinion of what she's brought to the team since she joined.
Yeah, she looks, I hope this comes across in a way that people can understand it, but she looks like an Arsenal player.
Absolutely, yep.
In terms of being comfortable in whatever situation you put her in, I think the first few games, obviously, you kind of just have to find your feet a little bit and just make sure you make the right passes. But then with each kind of week, especially, I think she mentioned after the Bayern game, with each week that passed, you saw her become a bit more confident and then play riskier passes. And also just try things on the ball. And she's someone who, when I'm watching her play, I'm just like, okay, impress me. Because something is going to happen. I remember at the Emirates, it was a very kind of tricky first 5 or so minutes. And then she does a little nutmeg on the halfway line and the stadium just is up. So little moments like that, and just, yeah, weight of pass, eye for a pass as well, which is the main thing, just seems like a very Arsenal player. And when it comes to the position stuff, and I know we've mentioned this 1,000 times, but the crossover between men's and women's at the minute is actually quite ridiculous, because I feel, looking on the men's side of things, I feel like there's a similar thing with Smith Rowe at the minute. Because he's someone who's so unique and a very Arsenal player that I think you can just throw him on anywhere and he'll be all right. Whether that will happen, I don't know. But I just think players like that are invaluable to a team like Arsenal, who are so orientated. And hopefully next season we'll be able to see more of that.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking more like Pullover Trossard feels like.
That's probably crossover.
But you know, just someone who you're comfortable with anyway. I think my assessment of Pullover is she's a small space player. She loves that. She's got a little bit of DVD about her in that, like, she likes to feel the player in her back. Like, she likes that kind of that contest, that small space. And as far as Arsenal are concerned, it just depends where those smaller spaces are. So, for example, for Arsenal, like on the left wing, we tend to have a lot of those smaller spaces. And someone like Caitlin Ford, who I voted for as player of the season, not that I have like an issue with Frieda getting it, but Caitlin is just one of those key players just because she gets that.
Yeah, you know, quick and feet.
And the way she dribbles and takes players on, she's almost like in the structure but out of it at the same time. You need those attackers who are a bit different. And I think Pullover could do that, easily do that on either flank, but we could easily, you know, see her in like central midfield. I just think she's quite Kim as well. She likes those small spaces. She's another one who on the ball wants and needs to be challenged so she can go past you, so she can clash. And yeah, you said she's an Arsenal player. I agree. I think like Frieda, she's a Jonas player.
Yeah.
That's how I'd characterize her. And I can see why he brought her in, especially having seen her up close playing for Ajax. But I guess that's a reasonable segue into, just before we go into a break, some of the things that we saw in the final few weeks of the season when personnel-wise, the squad was completely disrupted, completely broken. And, you know, the move to the back three, which Jonas then said a couple of weeks ago that he'd actually started the work on in January on the training ground. So he always had it in his mind that he'd like to be able to do that. But, you know, I think with the best will in the world, we probably know that Jen Beattie can't really play in a back four anymore. So putting her in the middle of a back three, that plays into all of her qualities. But yeah, just first of all, on the tactical side, moving to that back three and, you know, I guess the optionality that gives Arsenal for next season.
Yeah, so I guess Jonas revealing that came from a little comment he made in a press conference where he said he had to find different ways to think and find solutions. And then I just asked him, how do you actually do that? and thankfully, he actually went into like amazing detail in terms of them starting to do that in January when the Brighton game got postponed. And I guess from there, once you do it a few times in training, not because they felt they were actually going to use it, but just as another option, you're more ready to do it when the time comes. And obviously they trialed it first against Man City in the Conti Cup and it went well. Tried it again a few days later and it didn't go as well. But it was in their back pocket and that's what you want, I think. Just something different that you can posed to an opposition team that will throw them off a little bit. And it definitely did that when they did it again against Manchester City at Meadow Park halfway through the second half. I think Katie McCabe, Frieda Maarten were just giving them so many issues so quickly. And that's where the corner came from for Katie McCabe's winner. So I think just from that perspective, it's quite interesting to see, I guess, the fruits of the labour come in quite quickly. And then obviously once Leah Williamson got her injury, it was kind of, okay, we're just going to stick with this. But yeah, I think going into next season, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, fitness-wise, what they can do when, say, Beth, Vivian Miedema, Kim Little and Leah Walty are all back, because those profiles, I don't think you can maybe do exactly the same thing. So yeah, a lot of it at the minute is, I don't want to say unknown, but I guess the dilemma is now, do you revert to what was a very clear plan A at the start of the season, or do you kind of find a new system, which is maybe a little bit of both, or do you just say, okay, that is going to be for when we need it? So I think those are the kind of the interesting thoughts and discussions that may take place in the summer.
Yeah, that kind of midfield box shape where there's two sixes and two tens, I fancy we'll see that somehow. Exactly what it looks like, I don't know. But, you know, Arsenal and Man City men, for example, they kind of do that in possession, but they do it by sticking one of their back four into one of the, like, either Zinchenko or John Stones, and you get that box, and that's a very big thing in football at the moment. And I think that suits players like Pullover, like Freedom Mornham. I think that definitely suit Kim Little. I'm intrigued by that a little bit, and I think you make a good point there. Again, I'm going to make that kind of a historic comparison to the men's team, but it reminds me a bit of when Arsenal under Arsene Wenger got to the Champions League final in 2006 with a 4-5-1, and then the next season came and Arsenal kind of went backwards and forth, not brilliantly, yeah. It must be
said. Van Persie.
Yeah, they started experimenting with it and using it in big games, and that never really took off. But yeah, because you can get caught between the two stalls as well, I think. Yeah. So it'd be really interesting to see how fluidly we go. But I also think the Man City home game is a great example, because I think that is the big difference between Arsenal and Manchester City. Under Gareth Taylor, Manchester City do not change. They do not change in game. They don't sub any of their front three because they don't have a lot of depth there. Like, they do what they do, for 90 minutes of every single game. And I think you're right, we surprise them. And that's literally the reason Arsenal finished above Manchester City. That game decided it in the end. And that tactical switch won Arsenal the game. So I think that's like the perfect illustration of why Arsenal got into that third place at the end of the day. So, yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how that comes out next season.
Yeah, one thing on that is just like positionally, and I know people probably think, oh, positions, but okay, how does Freedom Arnhem play with Vivian Miedema? I would like to know how that goes. Where does Beth Mead fit in with a box? I don't know.
Yeah.
Does she go back central? Is she a striker again after how many years? Maybe 4 or 5 years. So these are all things where I'm just thinking, how do you actually decide on what to do?
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's a fine line between being muddled and being fluid. But I look at Chelsea and they've got it nailed. Unfortunately, that tactical, I say unfortunately, it's very unfortunate, that kind of tactical fluidity, that ability to use different players in different spaces. And I think that's where Jonas Eidevall probably wants to go. But we'll take a break at this point, and there will be more reflecting on the 22-23 season right after this.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, so thanks for rejoining us. Let's perhaps kind of finish off by looking at some of the specifics, particularly in the towards the end of the season. And I know you asked Jonas a lot of questions about Arsenal's progress as a Champions League outfit. That's somewhere where Arsenal have clearly made progress. Pretty much all of the Champions League performances have been an improvement on last season, bar Hoffenheim at home, which I think Jonas kind of talked about as a touchstone performance, whereas that has kind of carried on. But just, I guess, some of those big wins this season, some of those highlights, like the Conti Cup final, like Lyon away and Bayern, and just, I guess, Arsenal's progress as a cup team, maybe, or as a force in Europe, and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I feel like there's been very clear, almost checkpoints that they've hit in the past two seasons. And I guess this year, the main, I guess, areas for improvement were being able to make decisions more quickly in those Champions League games, those big games. And then also what we discussed earlier in terms of finding different ways to play against teams. And I think the Bayern Munich game stands out for me, both legs, because I felt even though they lost the first leg, the belief was there. And also, they were fairly dominant in that game. Fairly is probably an understatement. but very, though, that game was very similar, I feel, to the Conti Cup final against Chelsea, where Bayern started ridiculously well in the first 5 minutes, as did Chelsea. And you saw a team in real time have to wrestle with that, I guess, power. How do you get that power and control back? And that's where you see how important Kim Little is, because I think, to make it seem a bit more simple than it actually was, keep the ball and maybe an extra pass in that little deep area when you're playing out. And you just get a little bit more time. And I think that's really a really important part of how Arsenal were able to perform in those cup competitions and manage those moments. So that's the real step, I think, we've seen in those big games, how they manage particular moments that aren't going their way. And then obviously you've got the impact of them physically being able to be a lot more intense because of the groundwork that's been done last summer, in terms of what we spoke about in with Jonas's mission, if we'll call it that, last year, in terms of training with the academy boys. So I think there was a mix of football, physical related things, and then also mentally, how do you change approach when necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to come on to the mental aspect. I think particularly of the Conti Cup final win, and like, I think without that, the Bayern win doesn't happen. And you know, you're in the room as well when Jonas said, like, a good process only sustains you for so long. Sooner or later you need results mm-hmm. for the kind of belief of the group. I mean, how much do you think Arsenal can take that forward into next season? Or is that just like a temporary set of jump cables that will need to be kind of re-established again at the beginning of next season?
I think it will be a mixture of the two. So when we talk about these, I guess, checkpoints, Barcelona away is one of those. And it's a negative, I guess, experience. But it's one that feeds into how do we get better. So I feel like it will be one of those moments that sticks and makes you, I guess, have that inner self-belief to say, okay, next year, we've been through this already. We can do this. And it was interesting, actually, before the Wolfsburg game, talking to Lotta with Moyes, she mentioned the Chelsea FA Cup game a week before the Conti Cup, yeah, where they lost, and how that was actually quite a big moment inside the dressing room. So I think that there are going to be new moments. There's going to be a Conti Cup final type moment next year at some point. But this, I guess, was really important for the last 2 months of this season. And maybe it can be what gives them that real confidence in themselves as well, because I know speaking in the mix center, Raffaele Leovolti as well, they said that was coming, and that it helps, I guess, having something tangible there, as Jonas said.
Yeah, absolutely. The night before that Conti Cup final, I had a conversation with someone who was asking me about that final, and I said I thought Arsenal have to win. I think it was such a sliding doors moment for maybe like the Jonas side of our project, and mm-hmm. I thought he phrased it very, very well, as he usually does. You know, in saying that, like, every good process only sustains you for so long. And I really felt like you saw in that final as well. I know, so I didn't entirely agree with Emma Hayes kind of look, Emma Hayes phrased it in, I think, a fairly unfair way, but she'd just lost the final, and most managers are not particularly fair when that happens. you know, so... And she kind of referenced the extra hunger. I felt like that was a slightly unfair framing, in that I think Arsenal just outplayed Chelsea, but there was more than a kernel of truth in it. I felt like this final for Arsenal was make or break in a way it wasn't for Chelsea. I mean, for you, how important was it just on the mental side for Arsenal to end that trophy hoodoo and for it to be against Chelsea?
I think the biggest thing was the changes Emma Hayes was forced to make in the first half. I think that more than anything, yes, the goals and the way they played were great. But that almost, I think, just gave them a bit of assurance in what they were doing was right. And that they could just keep going. And that second half, I don't really, a few counterattacks, but it was comfortable. Mm. And I think when you're in that moment and you have such a clear, I guess, message that what you're doing is right, you can only go one way with that. So, yes, I do think it was a massive day in terms of mentally, it just all clicked into gear. And then you see from that, even with such a decimated squad, they're able to produce what they've produced. So I guess that was probably the kickstarter for what we're talking about now in terms of how they were able to respond to adversity in so many different games and just max out what was the potential for their season.
Yeah, and you know, we spoke a bit earlier as well about one of Jonas's mission statements for this season at the end of last season was about being able to play out much better from high pressure. And he said on Saturday, I think we've mastered that in a really good way. He said on Saturday his mission for next season, he referred to it as gamecraft. So he said, and again, unfortunately, I look at Chelsea here when he says this, but he was like, look, those games where it's a rubbish pitch, you're away from home, the referee's bad, perhaps you've had a Champions League game in the week before, and just finding a way to win those games. And for me, I think a big part of that, one of the things, I want to get your view on this, I'm really interested in, is assuming that Arsenal have a good summer transfer window and the squad does get bigger and there's more options, I'm really intrigued to see how Jonas uses a squad, because in his first season, he didn't really rotate. And I think that's probably just because he didn't trust enough of the squad. And this season, he couldn't rotate because of injuries. So let's go to La La Land, for a minute, where the summer transfer window is really good. All the injured players come back fine. There's a squad of 23, 24 next season. How do you see that going? Do you think Jonas is the type of manager that can and will rotate out of choice?
Out of choice is the big mm-hmm. thing. I think we've seen it in little driplets. Mostly, I guess, the prime example would be at right back with Laura and Noel, which unfortunately he can't do for the first half of next season, because I think in Laura's case, one, the Euros would have been a really big, I guess, step for her, and then also just for a viewing point as well, because she proved that she could do the job and do it so well, despite not being on the favored country, say. Going into next season, I would feel, especially in those attacking areas, there are now options where if you want to play a certain way, you go with this set of players. If you want to play a different way, you go with that set of players. I think that is there. But, and it's a very important but, it's what types of games suit those players as well. I think that will be the major kind of dilemma for Jonas, just because when you look at the, I guess the partnerships he's gone with this year, some of them have been quite game dependent, and it'd just be interesting to find out which players suit each other when everyone's fit, because not everyone's had a chance to actually play with each other yet.
Yeah, and that's a really good point about right back. I think also we're seeing a goalkeeper as well, in bringing in Sabrina D'Angelo and having that. Going back, is one of the first questions I ever asked Jonas when he joined, was it because Joe liked to rotate the goalkeeper based on how, I think it was, he had Pauline Perry-Mannion and Zinsberger, and he rotated them on the basis that Pauline Perry-Mannion had better long distribution, Manu better short. And so his idea was, if teams are going to press, I'll get Pauline to go over the top of them. If they're not, Manu can knock the ball around that kind of back four. So it's kind of interesting that it looks like we've got a similar model here. And I think Sabrina D'Angelo, in terms of coming off her line as well, basically what's really interesting to me is she's kind of almost the exact opposite of Manu Zinsberger. And together, if somehow you could smush them together, you'd have like the best goalkeeper in women's football history.
Yeah. It's kind of like the whole... a couple years ago on the men's side, the whole striker thing was basically Arsenal wanted a blend of Aubameyang's qualities and Lacazette's qualities. Yep. And I guess now we're talking about similar sort of themes in the women's team. My way of looking at it would be, I guess, how imposing do you need to be in a game? If we're talking about just outfielders, and you could maybe get goalkeepers involved in terms of how far they push up, do you want to control the game with possession, or do you want to control it with intensity? So I think some players will obviously lend themselves to one of those attributes a lot more than the other one.
Yeah, and again, we maybe saw a glimpse of that when Frieda came into the team when Viv Miedema wasn't injured, and he picked her away at Lyon, and I asked him about that, and he said, like, Frieda's one of our best runners, and we knew we weren't going to have the ball all the time, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, like, I wanted someone to run. Look, with the best will in the world, that's probably not Viv, but it's Frieda. And I think that's a brilliant example, actually, of like, yeah, this is Lyon away, we need something different here, and yeah, maybe that is a sign of that kind of, maybe he has gone to that increasing optionality, perhaps more than I've given him credit for there. But let's finish off with a couple of kind of quick fire questions. I'm going to ask you for your, I'll title it favorite game, but maybe the most interesting or intriguing, or maybe just your favorite, the game that really sticks out for you this season.
Yeah, I don't know if it's unfortunate, but we've already mentioned it a few times, and it's the Man City home game. I just feel like if you could bottle up one 90 minutes to sum up what Arsenal have been about this season, that would be it. And what kind of takes it to another level for me is, so when Bunny Shaw scored in, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
I don't know what you were like, but personally, I was just like, okay, that's it.
Yep.
It's going to be like 3-0 and that's that. But as the game went, again, very, it was almost like an out-of-body experience. You just saw everything changing in real time. And it was just a really, really nice example of a lot of what you mentioned earlier in terms of that flexibility being beneficial to Arsenal. But also, I guess it brought, and I don't mean this as like a dig or anything, but you saw Manchester City's goal scorer and Arsenal's goal scorers, and we all know what happened after that. So it's quite fitting, I think, that that was the game that swung it. So yeah, that's my favourite. It was my favourite game of the season.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like I said earlier, in the end, that gets Arsenal third. It just does. It's as simple as that. I'm going to go for Lyon away. I mean, really, my favourite game was the Conte Cup final, because beating Chelsea in a final was always going to be the highlight of the season. But I'm going to go for Lyon, just because if you had told me this time last year that Arsenal would win 5-1 away at Lyon. And look, I think there is a slight caveat about Lyon's injury situation at the time. However, Arsenal had a similar injury situation when they played Bayern Munich and Wolfsburg, and they did not lose 5-1. So, you know, I don't think it takes that much away from that result, but I just think that built the whole Champions League run. I really do. I think that result was the set of jump cables that made this team think, wow, we're a team, we can do this. And actually, they played slightly differently. They were prepared to not have the ball and hit Lyon on the break. And it was one of those... I can't remember, were you out there for that game?
I wasn't, no. I think I might have been on holiday.
Charlotte Harper was out there. French speaker for the Athletic. Yes. So that makes some sense. But, I mean, the press box at Lyon's really high up. And regular listeners, I've told this story a few times before. 3 minutes into the game, I took a photo of the pitch, because I was like, I can't believe how much space Lyon are leaving in the wide area. Like, both their fullbacks were like up here, and it was just Wendy Renard. And because of their injuries, they had a 17-year-old centre back as well. And like, it was one of those things where I was like, surely they're going to close this up. But I tweeted, like, I was like semi excited about it. I was like, Arsenal are going to look for these spaces. Yeah. I was trying to be tactful in case, but in my mind, I was thinking, if they keep doing that, we're going to beat them. I still didn't think we'd beat them 5-1. but, you know, Caitlin Ford scoring, like the first goal was literally Beth Mead crossing it to Caitlin Ford. And, you know, even when Lyon got back in that game, Arsenal score again before half time. And I think Lyon's belief went with that. That's another game. You referenced Chelsea in the Conte Cup final. Lyon made a substitution on 30 minutes. And I think that does give you confidence as a team to keep going. And Frida scores and basically keeps her place for the rest of the season on the back of that. I just think so much was built on that victory. And for me, there have been some real highs this season, but that one was a kind of... I spoke to someone who watches Lyon regularly, and they said, oh, they're defending terribly at the moment. I think this might be like a 2-all, 3-all type game. And I was like, oh, I'd take that. That'd be really good. And obviously we got the lion's share of goals, and it kind of was a 5-1 game. Like, it wasn't smash and grab. Like, Arsenal made those chances.
Consistent pressure.
Exactly. And the goals came consistently throughout the game. So I thought that was a magnificent performance, and it really built a lot of what were the good things that this season was based on. But okay, I'm going to ask you for your favourite goal this season. Is it going to be in the same game?
it really could be. but I'm going to go with one 3 days before that. And I think it's going to be... I don't think you get a more Jonas Edvard Arsenal goal than Freedom Marnum's against Bayern. Mm-hmm. Just from not just the goal itself, if people still have time, rewind maybe 30 seconds before the ball hits the net and Bayern are trying to play out from the back, and Arsenal just suffocate them. Leah Williamson just there. And from there, you get the one touch passes and then the finish straight into the top bin. And again, I was quite lucky where the press box was. I was almost like right behind the strike, and you just see it. It was so top bin. It was literally postage stamp territory. And me and I sat next to Michael Cox. We just kind of grabbed each other. It was that sort of moment. So I don't think I could choose another goal, because it was so unique and, again, summed up so much of what Jonas wants this Arsenal team to be about.
Yeah, I remember Michael's tweet after that. He described, and man who watches a lot of football at a lot of levels, he tweeted it was the most top corner goal he's ever seen. and I think, yeah, I think like when it literally doesn't even go all the way into the net, it's like, yeah, right under the crossbar post connection. And yeah, like I think essentially there were really only two goals that we could really, I mean, there are other good goals, don't get me wrong. Yeah. There were clearly going to be two goals. That was one of them. So to save you talking about the Man City game again, I'm going to say Katie, yeah, McCabe against Manchester City, not just because it's a brilliant goal. Look, we've seen Katie do that, you know, well into the double figures for Arsenal. But sometimes it's about when you do it as well. And actually, not a league-winning goal, but, you know, she scores one at Birmingham the year Arsenal, yeah, did win the league. And similar moment in terms of what Arsenal's actual target was at that point, similar importance. But you know, Arsenal played well in that game. Like you said, they came back into it, but it's not like they were creating loads and loads of chances. It needed that kind of someone just to step up. And look, we know Frida can hit them, we know Katie can hit them, and for her to do it as well, I just think the symbolic importance of her doing it on, yeah, the foot that that was in a boot, a protective boot, like 3 days before, and she still had the hole in her boot from where she went off against Bayern. Like, the kind of the symbolic importance of that, I think, as well, is not lost on anyone. So I'm going for Katie against Manchester City. And clearly that's the goal that gets us Champions League as well.
She should have just let us take the picture, man.
Yeah, I know. I know, that would have been absolutely iconic. But yeah, she had to run. But
it reminded me of Emma Mitchell's goal against Man City from, yes, the title. Like, I didn't want to say it for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
At the time, but it was very similar in terms of just the game in the balance, and then like that. It's in Arsenal's favour. So now the season's done, I feel free to say that.
yeah. And I think like the celebration as well is possibly the image of the season, where Katie runs over to the bench and she told us afterwards, I wanted to share that with, like she said, the players on the bench, like both the players who were injured and the player, because she just felt like it had been such a squad effort this season. Like, Jen Beattie ticked to over 1,000 minutes this weekend. Nobody would have predicted that back in September. And so for her to decide in the moment to celebrate it in that way, I think also shows you something about, you know, her sense of leadership as well. And she's really had to step into that role without the two captains there. So, yeah, I think that turned out to be certainly one of the moments, and certainly for me, probably the best image of this season. But that was really good fun going back over, particularly some of the high moments and some of the really significant moments. And, you know, with maybe a look to next season and what I think is going to be a pretty busy transfer window, you know, I was told last summer and in January about a lot of players we were very close to that didn't happen. So I don't, like, I'm really, really cautious about the information, but yeah, I think certainly the intent is there, but that can all wait for another day. Until then, Art, thanks so much for joining us again.
Cheers for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And we will be back with another episode, I think, probably next week. I've got a pretty good five-star guest lined up, so I'm just kind of hammering out a final date with them. But we really wanted to put out a kind of a season wrap Here, I also wrote about the season. If you prefer to, if you just want to hear all of, if you just want to read all of that in text, what Art and I have been talking about for the last kind of 50 odd minutes, then that's up on Arsblog News. And obviously, we'll be across everything that happens in the transfer window this summer. So keep it with Arsblog News. We will keep regular podcasts coming during the summer. But until then, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll speak to you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.